Pseudopod, episode 88. May 2nd, 2008. This week's story, The Guardian, by Michael Anthony. Welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm your host, Alistair Stewart, and this week's story comes to us from Michael Anthony. Michael's work has appeared before in the Dark Distortions anthology from Scotopia Press, and will be appearing next month in Desolate Places from Hadley Real Books. Your narrator this week is Danny Cartler from the Truth Seekers podcast. Election years are tough on political journalists, so if you see Danny, please buy her a coffee. Odds are she's going to need it. In the meantime, grab your stuff, watch your back, and keep moving. Because I have a story for you, and I promise you, it's true.
The Guardian, by Michael Anthony. Tolia ducked, almost losing her balance, and crouched behind a splintered counter. A group of Georgies shuffled by, invading the night with baseball bats screwed into their fists. Twilight was a bad time to be caught behind the divider. Joka, her little brother, needed medicine from the captain, but she couldn't risk going back now. He'd be okay in the tent until dawn. She inched her head up, glanced over the counter, peering through the broken mud-stained glass of the shop. The Georgies were scurrying away, toward the mall. One of them turned mid-run, glanced in her direction. She jerked her head down and chewed her lip. Had she been spotted? She couldn't take the chance. She clutched the bag to her chest, felt the contents poking against her breast through the plastic. She had been fortunate to find it, hidden in a hollowed-out cabinet in a back room. The rest of the store had long since been plundered. She swallowed a ball of spit and crawled along the tile, worming toward the back. She heard yelling outside, the boys backtracking. She crawled faster, her knees scraping against broken glass. If they caught her, they might not kill her, but they'd do nasty things to her. The gangs had found her sister once, and had given her the big belly. A little monster had squeezed out from between her legs, wiggling and twitching for a few moments before going limp. She remembered burying it, shuddering. The next day she had buried her sister. "Someone's here!" The sound of glass breaking. Tolia saw a boy climbing through the window. She jumped up, sprinting toward the back. The boy galloped after her, yelling like a wild creature. Tolia tripped over the bag, regained balance, slung it over her shoulder. She lunged toward the door and grabbed for the knob. The boy caught up with her, slamming his fist against it. "What you running for?" he said, grinning, exposing a mostly toothless mouth. "Let me go!" "What's in the bag?" He yanked it open. His eyes widened. "That's mine! Shit!" He swiveled his head toward the front window where the other boys were climbing through. "You won't believe this!" "What you find, Pook?" Tolia snatched the bag, hugged it to her chest. "My brother's dying. He needs this." "Everything here is ours." He tried to grab it back, and she jerked her knee into his groin. Pook clutched his crotch, fell to his knees. "Fuck, you little—" He squeezed his eyes shut, grimacing. "Fuck." The other Georgies scampered toward them. Tolia shouldered the bag, slinked out the door. She shuffled down the alley, heard the door flung open, the boys rushing out. She got to the street, ducked right. "Kill that bitch!" Pook yelled. She sprinted along the sidewalk, the bag bouncing against her back. The sun melted into the horizon, disappeared, engulfing the city in grave dark. Bloodthirsty screams could be heard in the distance, human howls. The gangs and muties were waking to reclaim the city in their nightly routine. A rock hit the back of her head. She winced. "Got her!" someone yelled. Tolia glanced back, saw the Georgies a few dozen yards behind, closing in. They'd outrun her soon. She could drop the bag. It would give her time to get away. But that would be like letting Joka die. Her uncle used to tell her, "You take care of your own, no matter what." She clutched the bag tighter, swiveled around the corner. Shops with broken windows lined the cracked sidewalks, deserted. Tolia crossed the street, hopped through a busted-out window, and kneeled in the darkness. The Georgies barreled around the corner, pipes and bats in hand. Pook shuffled into the street, stopped. Three others gathered behind him. "She's hiding," he said, pointing his bat at the storefronts. They lowered their voices. Tolia could see them whispering. She wondered what the captain would do, if he could have taken them all. He must have done great deeds to have his likeness so honored. The boys split up, running in different directions, searching the shops. One of the Georgies strolled into the building she was hiding, swinging his bat between his legs. She hugged the bag closer, backed into a corner, nudged against something. A display case? The glass was still intact, and she briefly wondered what had been stored there.
"You in here?"
the boy asked, studying the shadows. He kicked a rock. It rolled across the tile near her foot. "Bah, this is shit," he whispered. "We should be muty stomping." He strolled closer. Tolia's muscles tightened as she held her breath. The boy squinted, peering around. His eyes crossed her corner. He paused, then turned, started to leave. A rat scurried over her foot, nibbled her ankle. She kicked it and it squeaked, scuttling off. The Georgie rotated on the ball of his heel, his bat held in attack posture. He saw her shadow and lunged, pushing her. She fell against the display case and the glass shattered, sprinkling the tile. A shard stabbed into her side as she collapsed. The boy pounced on her. His weight pushed the glass deeper and she grimaced, felt blood dripping out of the wound. She wiggled under him, tried to buck him off, and he put his forearm over her neck. "Don't move," he grunted, sweat dripping onto her face. He pushed her legs apart with his knee. She felt him grabbing at her pants. She flailed her arms out, felt the broken glass, and grasped a pointed shard. Clutching it in her fist, she brought it up, thrusting it into his neck. The boy stiffened and jerked his hand up, batting at the glass like a kitten. Blood leaked out, soaked his shirt, and he slumped over. His mouth stretched open as if to say something, but instead of sound, a red spit bubble formed between his lips. Tolia rolled onto her knees and dug out the glass in her side, stifled a cry. She stared at the boy for a moment. She studied his eyes as the last glimmer of life faded from them, the way the light faded with the sunset. She had seen people die before, of course, but she had never killed anyone. She felt sorry, wanted to comfort him, then bit her cheek. Pity and guilt were weaknesses that could be exploited. He was dead. It was of no consequence. She wondered how many people the captain had killed with his sword.
"She's not over here!" someone yelled.
Tolia craned her head, peering outside. The Georgies were gathering in the street. She grabbed the bag, staggered up, clutching her side.
"Where's Pinky?" one of the boys asked.
Pook shrugged. He cupped his mouth, turned in a circle.
"Pinky! Find her? Better save some for us!"
Laughter. Tolia crept through the shop, feeling for the exit.
"Pinky, you in here?"
One of the boys climbed through the window. Tolia touched her way along the wall, felt the doorknob, slowly turned it. She heard the boy crunching glass as he stepped inside. It was too dark for him to see her, and she inched the door open, hoping it didn't creak.
"Shit!" The boy ran to the window. "Pinky's dead!"
Tolia slipped into the alley. It led back to the street, and she peeked around the corner. Two boys huddled outside the shop window. Pook was inside. One of the boys shook his head. "She killed Pinky." Tolia ducked in the opposite direction and shuffled down the street, the bag cradled into her stomach so the plastic wouldn't rustle. She got a few dozen yards when one of the boys yelled, "There she is!" She glanced over her shoulder and saw their silhouettes chasing after her. She hustled toward the center of town, weaving through streets and around corners, just out of their sight. She could hear their footfalls not far behind. As she went deeper into the city, the buildings got larger, some of them half collapsed in on themselves. She passed a few muties stumbling around, staring back at her with blank eyes. One grabbed her arm, and she swerved just out of its grasp. They made gurgling noises as she ran by. She passed a building with broken marble steps. A bronze plaque, almost black from age, was attached to the wall next to the tottering doors. It read, "To serve and protect." She could read a lot of words. Her uncle had taught her when she was young, but died before completing her education. "I'm your guardian now. It's my responsibility," he had said. He told her the atmosphere had poisoned his lungs, like the other adults, like her parents. She didn't understand the words, but she remembered his barreled chest, gasping for air, his exhales punctuated by wheezes, followed by silence. One morning there was only silence. She approached a large crater in the street, almost invisible in the dark, and tried to stop. She fell on her butt, sliding, her feet dangling into the pit. It looked like the street had caved in. She pushed herself up, glanced over the side. Steel poles, pointed and broken, and twisted metal jutted out of the dark. Her uncle had told her there was a city under the city, where people used to ride in the boxes that moved. The Georgie screamed behind her, closer. She hobbled around the collapsed pavement, stood on the other side. She tossed the bag to the ground and kneeled, one leg stretched out as if she had fallen. She then stared back, waiting. Two Georgies barreled around the corner. Pook followed behind. Pook aimed his bat at her. "You're dead!" She stood, pivoting as if to run. Two of the boys lunged toward her, fell into the hole. She heard their screams below. Pook skidded to a stop, fanned out his arms, flapping them like a bird, then fell backward. He rolled over and stared into the pit. The screams of his friends trailed off, went silent. He then stared up at Tolia. His eyes narrowed and the muscles in his face contorted, twitched. He began to shuffle around the crater, his eyes fixated on her. Tolia chucked the bag over her shoulder and ran. Two more dead. The captain would have been proud. She navigated through the streets, around craters and debris, avoiding muties. She'd never been this far into the city, wasn't sure how to find her way out. And Pook was gaining on her. She passed a fenced area filled with lifeless trees, metal poles with frayed hoops on opposite sides of broken concrete, and next to it a brick building with a giant fanged skull painted on the side. Dead boy territory. They were worse than the Georgies, but she knew Pook wouldn't stop chasing her now, even if he hadn't seen what was in the bag. The wound in her side throbbed, and she felt blood dripping out down her leg. She stopped to bunch her shirt up against the cut and heard the sound of boots scuffling over pavement, a street length behind. She glanced back, saw Pook's face twisted into a mask of anger and hate, and continued running. She limped around the corner, into an alley, clutching her side. She couldn't run much farther. The alley was tucked between two tall buildings and blocked off by a chain-link fence. Tolia hustled up to it, clutching the metal in her fingers. Just beyond was the divider, the outskirts of the city. Barren fields that stretched out for a few miles, and beyond that, the forest where Joka was, and the others like them. Pook would be a fool to follow her there. They protected their own. Pook swerved around the corner, darted after her. She heaved the bag, tossing it over the fence, then put her foot in a space between the links and began scrambling up. Pook rushed up to her, grabbed her ankle. She kicked backwards like a mule, hitting him in the eye. Pook staggered back, clutching his face. "I'm gonna kill you slow for that." Tolia climbed over the top. A piece of loose metal fingered her shoulder, slicing it open. She dangled for a moment, then fell to the other side, hitting the ground with a thud. Pook leapt at the fence, thrashing at the metal like a crazed monkey, pulling himself upward. Tolia grabbed the bag and paced toward the field. If she made it to the tree line, she'd be okay. Her side throbbed and she winced, momentarily losing control of the bag. It slipped out of her sweaty hands. Stopping to grab at it, she lost her balance, tripping into the dirt. Pook tackled her from behind. He punched her wound and she cried out. She held on to him, rolled over, pushing him off. They crouched, facing each other, and noticed they were being watched. A dozen dead boys slinked out of the dark and made a semicircle around them. Their faces were painted bone white, and chains and pipes dangled in their hands. A boy, older than the others, stepped forward. "Georgies don't go here." "This isn't your business," Pook said, his eyes on Tolia. "Everything here is our business." Pook swiveled his head. "She killed three of my friends!" The dead boy, studied Tolia as if she were a creature he hadn't seen before. You killed 3 Georgies? She got lucky. Get the fuck out of here. You got 30 ticks before we start hunting you. We have a truce if you... 25. Pook sneered. You'll be sorry for this. He jumped up, scurried into the night. Tolia struggled to her feet, grabbed the bag. The boy pointed to it. What you got there? Tolia gripped it tighter. He snatched at it, gazed inside. Some of the other boys gathered around, looked in. I haven't seen this since I was a kid, he said, sighing. My mom used to. It's for my brother. He's dying. He paused, nodded. My brother was killed by a Georgie. He tossed the bag at her. You better leave. One of the boys nudged him. Let's at least keep the bag. That stuff is... Shut your thumb hole. He turned to Tolia. I said, get out of here. She clutched the bag and limped through the field, not looking back. Tolia reached their tent near dawn. It sat between a patch of trees, near a creek that still had fresh water. Other tents dotted the area. She squeezed inside and saw Joka, his head resting on crumpled paper, a flimsy blanket covering his skeletal body. His face glowed like an ember. She touched his shoulder and he opened his small eyes, smiled. I found something, she said, petting his hair. She opened the bag, pulled out one of the rectangular red boxes, and held it out. A cartoon picture of a captain in a blue sailor's cap wielding a sword smiled over a bowl of cereal. This is Captain Crunch, like the surgeon who was a general. He knew a lot about sickness. She squinted, reading the box. Fortified with essential vitamins. She glanced up. Uncle said vitamins were good for us. It's medicine. Joka coughed and forced a smile, his cheeks sunken, his eyes dark splotches. Tolia pulled out the plastic inside, chewed it open. She grabbed a handful of the golden kibble and held them in her palm like jewels. She fingered some into the boy's mouth, one by one. He crunched into it, chewing. It's sweet, he mumbled. Good, eat. She put her palm to his forehead. It'll make you better. After a few hours, Joka's forehead still radiated and his wheezing was louder. She had gotten the wrong medicine. She curled up next to him, cradling him in her arms, and closed her eyes. She'd need rest if she was going into the city again tomorrow. The Georgies would be searching for her, maybe others too, but she wouldn't let Joka die. She took care of her own.
The world is always ending. Now we've established the cheery terms, let me be more specific. I'm 32, and when I was growing up, I distinctly remember living through a time where nuclear war was not so much a possibility as pretty much inevitable. My dad, who was my age during the Cuban Missile Crisis, still remembers finishing a play that weekend and saying goodbye to people because there was a very real chance none of them would be alive the following Monday. Then, of course, there's the millennium. The first millennium, the plagues, the wars, the seemingly interminable obsession with reality shows. My point is this, the world is always ending, but because of that, when it finally does end, it won't be a clean break. I absolutely love war games, not just for Ali Sheedy, I hasten to add, but for the fact that war games was my first exposure to the genial, smart English guy who tells you how screwed we all are. Professor Stephen Falcon was my first experience of that character, and the moment where he explains, calmly and cheerfully, that when the world ends, all they'll see is a bright flash, and that perhaps the bees will have a chance next, still sends shivers down my spine. I'm incredibly fond of characters like that, and it may utterly fail to surprise you. They've all had a major effect on me, especially Professor Falcon, but here he's wrong. We won't ever be fully wiped out, and whilst Mr. Anthony's story is tragic and grim and horrific, that crumb of comfort, that there is still someone left, gives it, for me, a real dash of hope. Of course, should the world ever end, my fondest wish is that somewhere a little piece of me will be left, perhaps a flash drive which one day our distant, distant descendants will learn how to use, and, crackly and faint but still distinct, they will hear these words. Pseudopod relies on you to pay its authors, so if you liked this story, please go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. I promise you, every cent is appreciated. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. And Pseudopod wants to tell you a story. Once upon a time, there lived a magnificent race of animals that dominated the world through age after age. They ran, they swam, and they fought, and they flew, until suddenly, quite recently, they disappeared. Nature just gave up and started again. We weren't even apes then, we were just these smart little rodents hiding in the rocks. And when we go, nature will start over. With the bees, probably. Nature knows when to give up, David.